Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell, and Bruce Pratt here for Sports Lit 101 to talk more about a book we discussed last week. Bruce and I both loved it, and so we get a chance to talk with the author about it today. His name is Jeff Benz. He teaches at Manhattanville College in Purchase, New York, is the author of Albert Himself and a wonderful bit of hockey fiction, The Mighty Oak. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for having me on. Hi, Bruce. Thanks, guys.
Hi. How you doing?
We had such a good time with this book, and as we talked about last week, Bruce, it wasn't what we expected, and anytime we're pleasantly surprised, we love that.
Yeah, I mean, I teach hockey lit, so I've read an awful lot of hockey literature over the years, and lately I've read a couple of books that, you know, sort of explored the same place Jeff was going, but Jeff turned it on its head because he made it about the character in a way that we don't sit there and say we got to feel real sorry for this guy from the start, which is what happens so often in hockey fiction. And I think the fact that this is so perfectly set in New England, if you're a New Englander, this book is really, you know, familiar to you, though it transcends location. What I really like is here's a guy who had the opportunity to do things differently and chose not to. And that's not usually the case in hockey fiction. I thought that was a great change.
Thanks, Bruce.
Jeff, talk a little bit, if you can, about the genesis for the book.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always liked hockey, and obviously. And it seems to me that, you know, hockey players have a lot of spirit. They got a lot of heart. And that's of interest to me, you know, just generally speaking. I mean, by the way, happy St. Patrick's Day, you know, speaking of spirit and heart. and I'm interested in collision sports and where are we with collision sports? You know, we certainly hear a lot increasingly about the NFL and about CTE, these sorts of things. But I think we're starting to look at all collision sports and contact sports. And hockey, of course, is you know, a game that's played, what do these guys skate, 30, 35 miles an hour? It's quite remarkable. So I'm just sort of was interested in, here's this guy that grew up and is a very narrow sliver of Boston, South Boston, is very hoping to capture that narrow kind of sliver of the hockey world. But, you know, here's a guy that grew up big and liked hockey and was good at it. And over time, you know, that starts to perhaps define his choices and define what he knows about himself. And he's good enough to skate at PC and get a tryout at the AHL. But he's a quarter step behind. And he starts getting defined as he drops down the league and his body starts breaking down and he starts self-medicating. And, you know, we pick him up at 32 skating in West Texas. So I guess it's a long-winded answer to say I like the sport. I like the spirit of the sport. Contact and collision and violence are and why we watch this is of interest to me. And then kind of hitting on what Bruce said, I like characters who are wounded somehow, that are wounded inside somehow.
Well, one of the things that we were impressed with is, first of all, that you got the hockey right. And obviously, having a knowledge and loving the game, but this is a different level of hockey than casual fans are knowledgeable about. So have you had some experience watching minor league hockey and knowing what that lifestyle is?
Sure. I mean, this book took me 10 years to write. And you mentioned that I teach at a college. One of the things that I do is I bring in, I've got three of those, at least three of those plastic containers that you might keep in your garage, just filled with interviews and notes and readings and this sorts of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I felt kind of drawn to this topic, and it's been my experience that, you know, if you're kind of honestly drawn to something and are willing to do the research, then hopefully, and you're not trying to go too big here, like I would not call this book, it's really great to hear that you guys think the hockey reads real. I would not call this book demonstrating a great expertise in the whole breadth of hockey. But in this narrow sliver through research, I'm glad to hear that. I really wanted it to ring through, you know, to people who knew hockey, that to people that knew South Boston, Quincy, the minors. So I'm hoping that's the case, and it's nice of you guys to suggest that it is, yeah.
Well, the thing I think that is so good about this is there's no book in the world I like better than The Good Body by Bill Gaston.
Yeah.
And Bobby Bonaduce is, to me, one of the most amazing characters in fiction. But what happened to him is a result of having a disease, and that's what takes his career down. When you watch people slide down lower and lower, they don't make it to the AHL, they're in the ECHL, they slide down to the SPHL or one of those, and you begin to say to yourself, what in the world makes you want to play a game? And I played hockey. I know how much it hurts, and I was one of those guys who was supposed to deliver that. why do you keep that up when you could do so much better financially doing something else? And I thought that was one of the great things about Tim O'Connor's. He couldn't figure out what else he could really do. He had options, but he'd gone so far down the rabbit hole that he couldn't find them.
I think that's right. And, you know, so he finds himself there. We pick him up really pretty broken and pretty addicted and really nothing more than, and I don't like the term goon because I think it's not accurate, actually. But this is what he's been made into and has accepted himself being made into, you know, at the start of the book. But, you know, all he says to himself is, if I can just get my hips back in order, if I can just get my, you know, cervical spine back in order, if I can just get my left knee back in order, if I could just get that step back, then I can rise back up the minors, and then who knows, you know. But we know it's delusional, and a part of him, I think, you know, is addict thinking, isn't it? I mean, a part of him has to know it's delusional. That's probably why the book opens as it does. But he's not able to face it at the beginning of the book. And I guess that's the wound that the book will put pressure on, and we'll see across the story, you know, how and if it transforms.
We're talking with Jeff Benz about his book, The Mighty Oak. And this obviously resonates beyond the world of hockey, because there are a lot of wounded folks out there, and there are a lot of people in careers and professions that have not gone the way they planned, and they don't know how to get out. There is no escape route for them. And so I think you don't have to be a hockey fan to love the story and be drawn to the story of Tim O'Connor.
I think that, thank you, Rick. It's nice of you to say. And listen, I think that we're all wounded to a degree. If we look at ourselves in fiction, I guess we exaggerate that wound, you know, to make it more compelling for the reader. And of course, Oak's wounds are both physical and interior, if you will. But I don't know, when I read books, the characters I like could be comedic, but not often, but the characters I like are got some kind of internal struggle, and the story is going to put some kind of pressure on that internal struggle, and we'll see how the character ends up after that experience of more pressure, you know. I mean, so yeah, I think, I don't know of a better term to use, I'm sure there is one, but this notion of kind of a shared wounding that we all have and that we all experience, hopefully is something that we can connect with fictional characters as well. Yeah.
We had John Scott on right after he won the MVP in the All-Star game and right before he retired. And yeah. One of the things that I remember Rich and I asking him was, you know, when did you know you were going to play hockey, and when did you know you're going to do something else? Because he said he had always dreamed he was going to be an engineer in Detroit somewhere for one of the car companies. And when I think about Oak, I think about when he comes back to the East Coast, and I'm not going to tip anything off that would be a spoiler. He discovers some other things he might be able to do, but he doesn't seem to be able to see that as the future. You know, he sort of sees his future, but he can't really see his future. What I liked about that was he doesn't BS himself at the end of this and the book. And so many characters do. They get near the end and then they fall on their face because they believe in some dream they can't have. Was that a conscious part of the way you had the book end?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That's really nice to put. Thanks, Bruce. Yeah. I mean, not sure, you know, people love redemption stories, but I'm not sure you can get a redemption story in 250 pages. I'm not sure you can redeem yourself when you basically blow off your own daughter not speak to her for 4 years for no particular reason, I mean, except for all the reasons that Oak has. So, again, not without giving much away, but it seemed to me that if this was going to be, anyways, some kind of reconciliation story or some kind of story where, yeah, at the end, possibly, while Oak could be worse off at the end, but if he's going to be better off, it's just going to be a quarter turn of kind of insight, you know, into who he is and how he's been living and how he could live. So, yeah, I wanted the reconciliation, or if we want to call it redemption, to be kind of tough earned, you know?
We also love the fact that none of the characters are caricatures. They're all real, and all the characters are flawed. They've got good points, bad points. There are some people that you're not sure you're going to like, and then maybe you don't like, but you at least understand the choices they make, and that's because they're all richly drawn, but very much real people.
Thank you. That's great to hear. That's certainly my intention. I always think that characters, every character, I feel like maybe ought to be given their dignity, you know. So even if someone has behaved badly, or even if someone is behaving badly, there's something about giving the character. This may or may not be true of real life, you know. I'm not talking that. I'm talking fiction, to me, how I would approach it. But it seems to me that, you know, unless you're writing genre, every character ought to have some sense of dignity, some sense of there's the dignified person inside of them, even if they're not always acting from that place. And again, that's where this kind of bruising or woundedness comes in, I guess.
When you see Oak in your mind, can we see his scars, I'm thinking about, you know, the great pictures of Terry Sawchuk, where if you see where he had all the stitches and the likes, it would be on his face. When you see him, did you see him physically scarred, or were you concentrating as a writer on those deep emotional scars?
Well, I was concentrating on the deep emotional scars, but certainly I did see him scarred. And after he's had operations, and then after an incident that happens in the first chapter of the book, you know, there's some stitches involved and things like this, and stitches on top of stitches and scars on top of scars. So I did see him that way. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that really came through. That impressed me a lot.
The book is called The Mighty Oak by Jeff W. Benz. It's available from Blackstone Publishing. We love the book, Jeff, and it's great to have the chance to talk with you about it. It's a character we won't soon forget, and a book that I look forward to going back to and reading again on a regular basis. Thanks so much for talking about it with us today, Jeff.
Rich and Bruce, thanks very much for having me on. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate all the kind words last week and this week. Thanks, guys.
You bet, and a happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Bruce, what's coming up next week on Sports Lit?
Next week, we talk with Courtney Zito about her book, Changing on the Fly, which looks at hockey through the eyes of the East Asian community in Canada, and it's a really fascinating study of the way Canada's changing as a nation, the way hockey is changing, is no longer just white Northern European guys. She takes a really, really tough but honest and interesting look at a lot of the changing dynamics in a sport that has tended to be looked at in a very monolithic way, I think.
All right, that's coming up next week on Sports Lit.